the kind of the initial reason I was inspired to do my presentation this week is because I wanted to bring some of these technologies to other people who are either in my industry or who are doing similar things in natural resource management and forestry and invasive species mapping or vegetation mapping, because I wanted to essentially show or demonstrate that the barrier to entry for completing one of these kinds of projects successfully is a lot lower than a lot of people, at least in my industry, would think it is.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to be a little more traditional in how we do things, and obviously part of that is budgetary reasons. We have kind of a little bit less wiggle room to experiment sometimes.
Sure.
So, so that's what was interesting to me about this project. Is essentially, I was able to map out very economically, a thousand dead trees that were in this, or around 1,000 that were in this this subdivision located in a pinyon juniper forest. So it's what we call the wild and urban interface.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was able to do that in a very economical manner. Basically, it took one drone flight, and then about, somebody was asking me this the other day, so I kind of tried to tabulate it back up in my head. I would estimate about 30 hours of my time, and a lot of that is just because I was experimenting and stuff. And
sure.
And I think, you know, for future projects, it would go a bit faster.
Well, what exactly did you do? Can you just tell me a little bit more in detail about the specifics? What stuff you end up using? What was your shopping list? What did you know going in? What did you figure out as it went on that needed to get done that you then incorporated into your project?
Sure. So I guess, I can go through the logistics of it. So the first step is getting the drone and the sensor. So we fortunately in the DNR, at the Department of Natural Resources, were able to kind of share our more expensive assets across divisions to kind of, you know, keep costs down a little bit. And so we were able to borrow a drone that is owned by the oil division of oil, gas, and mining. And they use that a lot for kind of the more, I guess, traditional kind of applications, because they need a survey grade.
Mm-hmm.
They need survey grade, and they also need very precise elevations a lot of the time, because they're trying to determine, and obviously this isn't my area of expertise, but my understanding is they're trying to determine, for example, after a mine has been closed, how much backfill they need to put in, and if they've put in enough to meet the standard that essentially the topography is the same as it was before the mine was put in.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can prove, or if they have reason to suspect that that's not the case, then they will approach the mine, and if the mine contests it, then then they might go into litigation. They use ground control points as well as RTK and PPK for that. When we borrowed their drone, it was just a quick mission. Took, you know, a couple hours of our time. We didn't do any kind of survey grade methodology. We just had, you know, used the regular onboard GPS.
Okay.
And just flew a area mission, so single, not essentially half of a crosshatch, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And that was able to obtain 3 centimeters. Approximately 3 centimeter resolution, which was honestly quite a bit better than I really needed. And then from that, I should mention, so we flew the mission using Esri site scan software.
Okay.
So that way, again, just to kind of keep things simpler and quicker, so we were able to, so basically the mission planning and actual conducting of the mission occurs in the site scan app on the controller.
Okay.
And then from there, you're able to, you have to do an additional step to upload the pictures, but then at that point, they're up through your browser, you can do that in the site scan site in your account, and then all the processing to create the orthomosaic, the photogrammetry all occurs in the cloud on the Esri's end, and so then you're able to you know, your computer isn't tied up or anything. You're able to just log back out and go about your business. And then essentially a few hours later, the next day, you can download it. And so we did that. And besides the OrthoMosaic, you can also have it create digital surface models and digital terrain models. So we did that as well. And then I took those three products essentially and used that to create basically two separate models. The first model is to determine, kind of delineate the canopies of the basically tree cover versus herbaceous vegetation and bare ground. And so that was kind of based on elevation or between those different terrain models. And so there was some tweaking that needed to be done there. But, you know, essentially it's just your standard canopy height model, subtracting one from the other. Then the second step was a random forest model to basically differentiate between the colors of like brown and gray for sort of the drought stressed and dead trees versus healthy vegetation that was different shades of green. And so obviously that was quite quick as well. And there were some different cleanup steps that needed to be done along the way, but essentially that was the gist of it. And and then I'm quite happy with how it turned out. So we were able to, then the final step was and by the way, all of this was done in ArcGIS Pro.
Okay.
So, but obviously there's other softwares out there that would do all of this. And then final step was just kind of throwing that, taking centroids of all the tree polygons and throwing that into a heat map. And then that's the final product that I gave to our wild and urban interface specialists. So then they're able to work with the community and plan out where they want to do treatments. Like they can zoom way out and see at a glance, you know, oh, there's a high concentration of dead trees in this area. That's where we should do our fuel thinning.
Okay.
And then so the way that works, I guess this would be the final part of my explanation. The way that works is basically they just have different methodologies to determine which trees within these treatment areas need to be removed. And so they can do hand cutting, mulching, and there's different kinds of equipment as well that they can put in there. They can use fire crews who are not on an active incident, for example. So, that's my long-winded explanation.
That's great. So you borrowed basically a pretty nice drone over this, and then I'm sure there are other people that could find ways to maybe borrow that piece of the technology puzzle.
Just clarifying that, or not clarify, but in retrospect, I could have done this project with the drones that we have in our division.
Okay.
Within DJI specifically, you can get, I could have done this with a $2,000 drone.
Okay. But you had access to a much nicer model,
exactly.
So why not? But I mean, because I think if they've got an application that requires something like that,
exactly.
Maybe, you know, just asking around and seeing if they can get access to it for a while. I mean, how long did you have to have it?
Just for the day. And it was, I mean, it was in southern Utah, so we had to drive pretty far, so it was a little longer than, but we could have just, you know, if it was nearby, we just needed it for the day.
For the day. Okay, and then was the rest of it, the site scan and the Arctic, that was all yours?
Yeah.
So then you just, hypothetically, if you needed that quality, you could borrow that for a day, and then everything else on your own.
Yeah.
And
that's fair.
How would somebody go about, what would they need to be able to do that? Let's say they did need a drone of that quality, and then they could borrow it. What would they go about doing to get their project moving when they had to give the drone back?
Okay, well, I guess I'm not sure where I should start. I guess I would assume that you're talking about somebody who already has a Part 107 license, or who has maybe access to, or has experience with less expensive drones, but if not, then I guess I would say if this is a pilot project or like a proof of concept, then you probably want to borrow also, or have the pilot come with you.
Okay.
Of your, you know, whoever you're cooperating with. But once you start doing these kinds of projects or using drones and other applications. The Part 107, which is an FAA licensing requirement, that's not too time intensive to acquire.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then I guess...
Is that manual flying or programmed?
So it's required for both, but the... It's actually a written test, essentially, is the main component. So you're required to know all the regulations and everything. And then, so then in addition to that, like you alluded to, you probably want to have some experience on the controls before you're, before you jumped into borrowing your, whoever you, your contacts drone. And part of the reason for that is because even when you are doing an automated mission, so you actually don't really interact with the sticks as part of the normal process of the mission. But if anything were to happen, if you have what's called a flyaway where you lose connection, or if a bird decides to dive bomb your drone, then you need to be able to take control of the sticks at any time. So you do need to know what you're doing.
So let's say you either figured this out or you bring in a pilot. Once you take the drone out, what do they need to do as far as like the data import? What do they need to know to be able to get that part once they're done with the drones?
Sure. So I guess, I mean, you need to make sure that the SD card has been formatted correctly ahead of time, and then all of the pictures should be on there. So then you just physically remove that, upload them wherever they need to be, and then you're ready to process. And there are other... there is other software for orthogrammetry that might be better if you need a survey grade.
Right. And yours is basically just taking photos and orthomosaicing around like that?
Yeah, yeah.
No LiDAR scanning or...
Yeah, correct. Yeah, no LiDAR. We just use a red, green, blue camera.
Okay. What were... key problems or something that unexpected that happened that you had to figure out what to do? I mean, it went just perfectly. You know, that's great. But usually that's not.
Yeah,
the
I guess that's. I would say it did kind of go perfectly. In this particular case, we do have other projects that are more difficult. So we're trying to do something that is sort of superficially similar on the Great Salt Lake. So the first project I mentioned, that's for our fire program, and within that we have wild. As in addition to fire suppression, we also have wild and urban interface, which is what that was for, and then. For state lands, which is mostly sovereign lands, those are the bodies of water at the time of statehood. So for that program, a lot of the work, or what we're trying to apply that to, this kind of process to, is for invasive weeds mapping.
Okay.
And so we have one kind of ambitious project that we're trying to advance where we're mapping Phragmites infestations around particularly the eastern side of Great Salt Lake.
Uh-huh.
And so for that one, I mean, it's a very similar idea. We're trying to see where certain types of vegetation are on the landscape, but it just happens to be that that's a much more difficult project. And so we have collaborations with... Is that a train?
It's not true. Something in the bowels of the inner workings of the convention centers that you don't usually get to see in here.
Yeah.
Transporting big food around or something.
Probably, yeah.
Is that more difficult because of it's harder to recognize different species of invasive plants rather than just dead or alive? Or what are some of the... Why is that tricky?
That's a decent way to put it. Essentially, I guess that's what's kind of interesting to me about these projects is, like I said, like the point for the first project I was talking about is to show how low the barrier to entry is for doing these kinds of things. Because I know a lot of people in my industry they're like, oh, well, you know, AI, that's, I don't know, we'll have to hire somebody to do that or whatever. On the other hand, sometimes these projects can be much more difficult than you anticipate. And yeah, I think at a basic level, that's a fair way to characterize it. Is, you're looking at different types of green vegetation. But really, I would say in a way, to do these projects successfully, you're looking for a trick. So, in the first project I mentioned, it's pretty straightforward. You know, they're either green or brown. In other projects, like we have trying to map a species that's colloquially called white top, and so it has bright white flowers. That's pretty straightforward. When you have, you're looking for some kind of trick in the spectral signature or in the texture or in the elevation profile, because you know it's not magic. It's not going to be able to just determine something. You have
but
to.
When they're
kind
blooming,
of,
you can see the white, but when they're not
right.
blooming, it's a bunch. They look a lot more like a lot of other reeds.
Exactly. Yeah. But so for the Phragmites, the issue, I guess, the main issue is that. Yeah, the differences in the spectral signatures are really subtle, like you're saying. And also, the phenology is really different. So you can have wetter areas that are they're flowering. In the meantime, these drier areas are already starting to go dormant.
Mm-hmm.
And so trying to figure out how to map all of that is just extremely complicated.
Is that more of a scientific issue than a technical one? Or is it the technology that you can figure out how to tweak to answer your scientific problems, if that makes sense?
Well, I would say it's a modeling issue.
Okay.
It's just a more, you just need a more, I don't want to say complex necessarily, although that is kind of true, but it's just more difficult to come up with or to create a model that works.
Okay. And is that something that can be done that's after the fact on the in-house side? Like, say, okay, you've flown a drone over your invasive weeds,
mm-hmm.
and you've got all the data, get that, you still can be done with the drone portion, then it's you figuring out on your team, okay, well, how can we take this, or do you need to know what you're looking for ahead of time before you fly with the drone?
Well, a little bit of both. So one issue that you need to make sure about ahead of time is ground truth data.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not always apparent because sometimes it's just obvious from the imagery what's going on, but oftentimes it's not the case.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to plan that out ahead of time. And collecting ground truth image or ground truth data that is useful is also requires some planning. So typically, I think ideally you'd want to go back as soon as you have your orthomosaic,
mm-hmm.
go back to the site and sort of map out some areas based on your imagery so that you know what's going on in these areas.
Okay.
And then you can either, and then at that point, either you are able to see visually, well, now that I've been there, I know
mm-hmm.
that this is what this looks like, and I can map it out in other areas, or you really can't tell, but you at least have enough ground truth data to start training your model.
Okay. So it requires like a little bit of reconnaissance, but not necessarily repeating the mission twice?
Right. Yeah, exactly. You can also, I mean, typically I haven't been able to do that usually. Usually I need to get an idea of ground truthing while I'm out there, just to kind of save on time a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I should mention really quick is, on the other hand, you can kind of go back in time and map these things out, and you can even, I mean, some projects don't even require drone imagery. You could just
mm-hmm.
get existing satellite data, depending on what you're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives you an idea of how close the resolution is for some of the projects in my industry.
Okay. No, sure. I mean, it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
You're dealing with, you know, large war situations. And I can actually relate. I was got Beetle Kill Forest, which is what I was taking out with,
right.
And White Top's an issue where I live. So, advice for people doing projects that maybe are afraid of trying this. Why should they not be?
It's fun.
Okay.
So might as well
do fun things.
Yeah, might as well try it out.
Okay. Like it. Anything else though that if they think it's too much for them? Like, can you be like, you know, I tried this and I think it'd be okay and have that.
I guess start with.
52,000.
Something that's simple enough that you can kind of have a plan going into it. Like that was part of the reason this subdivision project was so successful, because you know I kind of knew going in vaguely that I'd be using a canopy height model to delineate the trees,
mm-hmm.
and then that I'd be distinguishing based on color.
Sure.
So I knew, you know, so because of that I knew kind of. I
you
knew, for example,
in trying to bite off more than you
yeah.
To
I knew, for example, that we didn't
one.
Need our multispectral sensor and that kind of stuff. And
okay.
I think if you're hoping, I would do something like that to start off with. I don't know if
set your expectations a little lower for the first couple times. Don't think of
yeah.
the most incredible thing ever that you could do, and start with that.
Well, but that's the thing, though, is. I wouldn't say there's really a correlation. I guess that's why I would encourage people to start doing this stuff, because there isn't necessarily a correlation between how difficult it is and how useful it is.
Okay.
So you can find something that, you know, would be really nice to know where, you know, this certain type of tree is. And you, let's say, you know, it happens to be something with the phenology, like, oh, it's the only thing that's green at this certain time of year. Then you have a plan going into it, how you're going to map it out. But if it's really useful to know that,
right.
then you're, yeah. I mean,
doesn't need to be that complicated.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay. So if not, it doesn't matter how useful, but like maybe just the difficult skill level isn't
yeah, the
easier way into that.
Right. How complex the model would have to be able to do a good prediction.
Start slow there, but don't worry about how complicated your end result we're trying to figure out.
Yeah, that sounds fair.